From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, it's the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. We do that by building the backyard advantage, working on building the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. It's based around a culture of love, helping one another, helping each other, and simultaneously helping our hometown win. And today on the show, I'm excited because we have a guy that he comes to the Sacramento area pretty regularly. He came out to GFX, and he has a radio show, and he's in venture capital, but he's from the Bay Area, so he's got a different perspective on Sacramento maybe than some of us that are sort of in the weeds here in Sacramento. So we're going to get his perspective. We have Brian Sparks. He is with Silicon Valley Ventures, the chief venture officer. He's the host of Silicon Valley Impact, a 92.9 FM. I don't think we can get that here. And the Bay Angel. So that's an angel...
An angel network.
Okay. So yeah, I look forward to talking about all three of those and getting to know you a little bit as well. And you're also a Niner fan, which I really appreciate.
We were geeking out about that. Now we got to shift gears.
Now let's talk business. Okay. Yeah. So how did you get into this line of work?
So I'm a second generation entrepreneur. I grew up in San Jose. My dad had multiple businesses in different sectors. And I just kind of watched him. Everything he touched turned to gold. And that was just what I grew up in. And, you know, you kind of think that's just the way he does things or that's the way life is. And as, you know, kids grow up, you kind of go out and experience other things and then realized, what he was doing was kind of cool. So then came back to it and really have immersed myself in the ecosystem probably the last 15 years, 10 to 15 years. And more importantly, I've poured a lot of money into branding and relationships, which I really think are the foundation of all things that grow and scale well. And that's what I love about your philosophy. And in fact, we got to kind of know each other and chat last year, a little bit before GFX. And we just geeked out on this idea about how do you come from the heart first? So there's a few things, a few hats that I wear, but I could just kind of go on and on and rattle on, but that's where it all begins.
Let's talk about that come from the heart first. Now, I think people that know me know that that's sort of how I live, and I have this philosophy of building from the inside out with my family and my friends and my community. But what does leading from the heart and starting with the heart first mean for Brian Sparks?
All right. You ready to geek out on this?
Yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, let's do it. So in startup, even small business, I really believe that all ventures are built on pain. There's a problem that is really affecting a market, a group of people, and someone says, I can help. I have something. And so it's right there where empathy and understanding of a pain point, great ideas come to market and really serve in a way that makes life better for others and bring people together.
Yeah, I love that. Somebody asked me the other day about, I was on somebody's podcast and they were asking me about, how to do a good pitch and, you know, what does that consist of? And I didn't answer it as eloquently as what you did, but really identifying that pain point. And if you have a personal connection and empathy for that pain point, and better yet, a solution to help solve that pain, then that's part of what makes an effective pitch. And a lot of startups sort of lose sight of that, and sometimes they just come in and start selling you.
Yeah. One of my companies, which is focused explicitly just on go-to-market communications, we work with, you know, Startup Grind. We work with Plug and Play, Unleash, Transform, a lot of big conferences and accelerators. And it probably equates about 1,400 companies a year that we work with. And one thing I tell these startups that are trying to really hook their audience and the investors is you've got to tell us what the pain point is that you're solving within 15 seconds. We know you're smart. We know you have a good idea, but at the end of the day, the best idea doesn't win. It's, are you solving a problem and speaking to the right audience? So you can really touch on, you know, what your vision is, and then is this pain point, is this problem worth solving? Then you can bring in your idea. A lot of mistakes that startups make is they fall in love with their own idea, and then they start talking to the wrong people in the wrong way, and their go-to-market strategy is shot. They've spent a lot of money, and marketing is expensive. Moving into the market and capturing the market costs a lot of money. So you want to get it right from the beginning, and I really believe it starts from the heart with understanding the pain.
Yeah, agreed. Now, let's talk about your businesses for a minute. We can circle back around to startups and how that works and what doesn't work. And but so do you have like a primary business you consider like, hey, here's my main thing?
Yeah, so right now it's Silicon Valley Venture. And Silicon Valley Venture is really bringing together multiple ecosystems and ideas and businesses I've been doing over the last decade and putting it under one umbrella. And it really has a four-prong approach. And one is the go-to-market communication, which I believe, and I've talked to on my show, as you probably have, a ton of investors and VCs, and from their perspective, hands down, the number one thing other than a good idea that has the right time, you need to be able to communicate. So in order to scale our businesses quickly, we need to have that skill set within the founder and the team. So that's the go-to-market communication piece, so we focus on that. The second piece is community design. I have the fortune of having a very large network, including being the head of communication for Bay Angels, which is one of the longest running angel networks in Silicon Valley. And the ability to design a community that really fits the mission is true alignment. So we really focus on that. We do a lot of events. In fact, this is going to sound counterintuitive, but I just wrote an article on my LinkedIn site called Events Are Dead. And the reason why I'm saying that is one-offs, I believe, don't work. I mean, Mark, you do so many different things, and kind of utilizing that approach where you do events, where you have the radio show and podcast, you have a newsletter, you do dinners and you do panels and pitches. When you have all these touch points, you start to cultivate an aligned ecosystem. You do one-offs, people just come and have a good time, and then they look for the next good time. And that's really kind of hedonistic in terms of a consumer market, which we want to avoid. We want to develop that relationship so we have all these touch points. And so that's what I've kind of classified as community design. So we take a lot of our companies that we favor into this process and design their community. So that's the second bucket. The third bucket is my journey into radio, which is a story in itself, but we'll come back to that. So we're putting that underneath Silicon Valley Venture. And then finally, the third part is global immersion, which is reaching out to governments and organizations overseas in order to bring cohorts to Silicon Valley and immerse them in the ecosystem to either do one of two things, scale quickly, or two, just learning and development, just kind of explore what it will look like to either be here or launch a business that may be favorable in the U.S. market. So all four of those prongs come together in order to align, accelerate, and provide access to our startups. The goal is to attract the best startups in the world and partner them with the most resourceful VCs and investors.
And then who do you consider the customer in this scenario? Who pays your bills?
So we have multiple streams.
Okay.
One we have under the event coordination, so we have sponsors. With go-to-market, we bring in early-stage companies that want to really align that, so we'll work with them there. And then we have venture partners. So our venture partners are fund-to-fund, so we have a great partnership, for example, with Ignite GTM in Silicon Valley. These are organizations that are like-minded, kind of like yours, mm-hmm. who really put people first and grow the ecosystem. And when we can play together and we have a bigger sandbox, we can just pull from each other's resources and attract more. Again, that's my number one strategy in terms of going to market is how well do you collaborate and bring resources together?
Yeah. So, and you and your business is at the heart of this, what's known as the number one venture investing area of the world. And you're the main connector of all that. And you're driving these relationships. Here I am in Sacramento. We're trying to do it a little bit differently, but a lot the same in terms of building a tribe so that we help one another. And it sounds like you've got that, but your tribe is also connected outside the Silicon Valley. So mm-hmm. the connections that you have outside the Silicon Valley, how do they help the Silicon Valley?
So again, the goal is global. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you are in our backyard, right? I think it makes for a great partnership to play together. And again, it's not so much whether you are in the backyard in Sacramento and we're in Silicon Valley or someone is halfway around the world. I think once you have in this day and age that connection, that trust, that relationship, we can do better. You know, 1 + 1 = 10, my friend Bill Berry often says. And when you're leading with heart, when you're heart-centered, I really think that's where the trust comes from, and you can scale quickly.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so let's talk about the power of that tribe, if you will.
Yeah.
What if one of the startups is coming through your programming and looking for help, these connections that you can make, these warm introductions, I assume that's part of what happens. Mm-hmm. Can you give me some examples of some introduction or the type of introduction that can really make an impact?
So we just worked with a Kuwaiti cohort that came in a few months ago. We also just worked with a South Korean cohort. But with this Kuwaiti cohort was really unique. One of my venture partners, his name's Zamir Zuko. He's with Vibranium VC. And he is a master in terms of learning and development, curriculum. He's a great investor. And so he and I partnered and provided training at Stanford, did a lot of networking events, lined this all up. They had day in, day out of education and workshops, and we'd bring in speakers and all these resources in order to give them a sampling of what is necessary to scale here. And then ultimately brought in more investors, despite the organizers were investors as well. I think when you bring in that healthy competition, it also allows people to have choices and you come off as a trusted advisor. And if you can say, hey, look, I'm an investor or I'm in the same market as you are, but so are these others. And they're doing this really well. And I want you to look to them if that's what you're looking for. And you say, this is what I do real well. This is my differentiator. They may choose your competitor or another investor, but what sticks is the trust. Mm-hmm. And again, that is really what we're going for globally. And so the cohort on their last night here, we got together at a sponsor's law office, a really nice law office on Sand Hill in Silicon Valley, and they gave a pitch, and the pitches were phenomenal. And the house was packed with other investors. It was a great networking experience. And then the next day, they looked around the bay and then flew home, and we got a ton of LinkedIn messages and emails saying how amazing this was. And so we're looking to do that. And that relationship goes on. And so we want them to come back. We want them to utilize the resources they got here. And we truly believe that you no longer need to be in Silicon Valley to benefit from Silicon Valley. The truth of the matter is everyone thinks they need to be there, but you really need to be where your customer's at. You can utilize Silicon Valley for education, for resources, for financing, a lot of things. But you don't need to be there. If you come, great. We love to have you. But I think that's the economy we're in now. We can be anywhere in the world and benefit.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like COVID changed people's mindsets on that, where there's nothing that replaces face-to-face. But once you have some face-to-face and the trust has been started, you can be really efficient by doing a Zoom call, and you can get deals done. There are plenty of companies that we've invested into that have raised money outside of the region. Maybe some initial checks come in from Sacramento, they stayed here. They didn't have to move to Silicon Valley or New York or elsewhere. They decided to stay here to build their company, and Silicon Valley and other areas are interested in investing into them, maybe more than ever.
Yeah,
yeah.
And one thing I realized coming, getting to know the area last year in terms of what you guys are doing in the Growth Factory. And I've been coming here for years and didn't realize it. But the hunger that's going on here and the desire for involvement and the questions and the curiosity. Your conference last year was just ripe with that. People were staying around after hours. They were talking nonstop. You couldn't shut them down. So that vibe allows for a lot of innovation and possibility. So, and you see that all over the country, you see that over the world. And so when you get that together, it makes the sandbox a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's cool. So what would you, how would you characterize the state of venture these days? We've had a lot of uncertainty over the but coming up before the election. Now there's even, maybe there's less, there's more uncertainty from the election. Things are moving fast and furious. What's the mood in the Silicon Valley?
Well, I mean, the headliner, and I think the optics are important. The headliner is raising is tough. And that's true. And I think it could be for a number of reasons. And we could do a deep dive in the economics of it. But I don't think that's the primary takeaway. I think what's really important that can apply to any VC at this point or any startup at this point is if you're bringing a unique value add to a situation, then you're going to find the funding. If you bring a unique relationships with your team, whether it be your investment team or whether it be your your startup founding team, you're going to find those investments. The problem we're having now is we're having a boom in VCs, but we have a lot of zombies around where it's like, I'm a VC, but they're on their first fund and haven't raised anything yet. And it's going to go away of the life coach, right? Where there's all these possibilities to raise, but if you're not bringing an additional value add, then I don't think you're going to have access moving forward. And so how you guys position yourself and the way that Silicon Valley Venture is positioning itself is that we want to provide this tremendous value add up front and attract the best of the best, build the trust, and then ultimately down the road, possibly, and not that I'm soliciting or anything at this point, the possibility could be we would become our own fund of funds. We're still trying to figure that out, but that's 5-7 years down the road. And so venture capitalists need to really take on the same, I think, strategy in terms of raising. The other day on my show, I had Alex Dang. He wrote Venture Mindset. And also I had Essie Mawadi, who you met at GFX. And they're both looking at this value add. I mean, Alex just wrote a great book, Venture Mindset. It gives you a lot of insight on how investors are thinking. So you can check it out. Yeah, check it out on Amazon. It's also at Barnes & Noble's. And then Essie, she's getting in front of the camera and the mic and on stage. And of course, both of these are, Stanford people, but they're still continuing to find ways to grow and bring value. So no matter what the economy is, I think when you play at that level with that mindset and that approach strategically to bring extra value, you'll be able to weather the storms and find your resources and raise.
Yeah, I think so. And I think many times these things are somewhat cyclical based upon what's going on in the economy, and entrepreneurship is not going out of style. And what I tell people occasionally is that, you might want to think about raising money from your customers, because if you can show some revenue, then that's you can have a little bit better chance of attracting venture capital if you've already, begun to drive revenue. So, but thinking about that as an investor in the investment community, with the rate of acceleration in technology, I sort of wonder, how are they choosing between the, the ones that won't even be here a couple of years from now, because technology is just going so fast.
Yeah. I mean, to avoid any advice giving or anything like that, my heart and my interest right now, my energy is going and focus of understanding is really going into infrastructure. There are so many great ideas happening, but with, as you're saying, the boom happening, it's what will that look like 6 months from now? I mean, it's changing so rapidly. So we're having conversations. I mean, I had an opportunity to interview the mayor of San Jose and talk about how we can collaborate with local, federal, state government in order to be involved with the build out of infrastructure.
So data centers,
yeah. How we're going to get this energy? Where is it going to come from? What's sustainable? So we're looking at a lot of different things. I'm researching a lot of things in that space because I really think that's where it's going to have legs.
Yeah, and you're an investor as well.
I would consider myself right now an angel investor.
An angel investor. Okay, yeah. So right now you don't have a fund associated directly with you.
Correct.
Basically the person orchestrating the connection of all these investors.
Yeah, particularly with the fund of funds with Ignite. That one I have a particular interest in because we align with the AI infrastructure. And so we have a little partnership.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay. So let's think about the building of an ecosystem. This ecosystem began I guess in the 70s, right? You have Hewlett Packard, you get some of these startups that are having some success, you're becoming more than startups, and then that success breeds success. I've read that book, The Rainforest, and it kind of talks about these ecosystems building kind of organically. Mm-hmm. And so when you decided you wanted to get into the middle of it, what was the condition of the rainforest at that time?
So what got me back into, well, I grew up in the rainforest, mm-hmm. right? I grew up in it. And of course, right next door to where I live is Stanford, right? You know, and then of course up the road is Cal. And so you have these institutions that are globally recognized for, you know, pumping out some really smart people. And then the infrastructure around it in terms of shipping and, be able to ship globally is right there as a hub as well. So those things that we often don't look at when it comes to tech, these outlying institutions, I think are what begins, right? And so that kind of, as I reverse engineering, what goes into making an ecosystem is where are the partnerships? So one of the things I focus in on my radio show is talking with people who are really good at partnerships. And so what does that look like in order to start and accelerate an ecosystem? But you know, back to your original question, what really kind of flipped the switch for me is like, I got to get back into this big league, is at the time I was working for a biotech incubator. It was a global incubator, and we scaled life science companies internationally, whether they were coming into the U.S. or going out. So we ran the labs, we ran the event center. We just had everything in this one location. And that's when I full on fell back in love with what it takes to scale. And it started with just partnerships. It really started. And once you started having kind of the necessary infrastructure, not to sound like a broken record, then you are a resource to more and more people. And then you start, you know, doing events, you bring people together, you start listening, you know, what are you looking for? What do you need? And you start connecting the dots. I think one of the big problems Silicon Valley has, actually it's one of its biggest advantage, but it's also one of its biggest problems, is you have incredibly, incredibly smart people that go deep into a subject and give you your innovation. However, they get stuck there and oftentimes don't see how to connect the dots. I mean, if you've ever been to a pitch competition, you know, where it's, you know, a tech pitch night or something versus a biotech pitch, they're very different. They're very different. And you can see the need of both, how someone needs to come along and go, okay, you need this resource, you need that resource. Smart people are starting businesses because they have deep knowledge.
So the biotech conference or meetup is filled with very smart people who are not as good at communicating, potentially building trust. They need some of the people that are at the traditional pitch contest. Is that kind of the message?
Kind of, yeah. And so what I've noticed, you actually get that on both sides, but let me double click on it and expand it. What you get at a biotech pitch is a lot of smart people who quickly explain a business concept, maybe within 15 seconds, here it is, but then it goes all into research and data, and you feel like you're in a bio class, right? All of a sudden, and for me, that goes right over my head. And then you go to a tech night pitch event. And of course there's a business model. There's, you know, what it is, where's the market. There's a product there. It's well-rounded business model, and you can see the traction. Click back over to the bio and it's all trials still. It's, we're in this phase, we're in this stage. Traction and momentum is really built on data as opposed to with how the market is responding. But in both, you do have very smart people who don't really kind of give the bigger picture. So I would suggest, if you're really looking to connect with investors, is find the person who can first explain what the end goal is. And so for a biotech company, their goal may be for merger and acquisition very quickly before it actually becomes a full-blown business. Whereas then a startup where it's tech or something, some other market, it may just be the next inflection point, which may be, well, we're looking to raise $3 million, you know, into seed, and we're trying to go to market. And so they have that strategy. And it's all a chess game to me, if you ask me. You can learn how the pieces move, But strategy is different with everybody. And the ability to look at the game from multiple perspectives, I think, is really the key to a great strategist and great CEO and great team.
Interesting. So I was thinking about the Silicon Valley. I go down to the Niner games, and I haven't been to a Giants game. You know, I go to the 49er games all the time, but I haven't been to a San Francisco Giants game in probably a year and a half, a couple of years. Mm-hmm. San Francisco is a part of this ecosystem, but it's been kind of hollowed out. How has that affected venture overall? Because, I mean, I assume the money's still there, but the Nordstrom's not there anymore.
You're talking about retail. It's funny. We just struck a collaboration with an organization called the Sphere Sports. And also, we're getting Mission Rock involved. It's, you know, a partnership with their partnership with the San Francisco Giants. And I believe in March, or is it February? I'll get you the right dates. Yeah. You can put them in the show notes. But the goal is to bring larger events focused on venture and startup in order to not only bring great people together, but also for the purpose of economic development. I mean, being in venture and having access to a large amount of people and doing events, which I now call campaigns, in a particular area, is really an economic development package. That's why we are, you know, having conversations with our local government, say, how can we partner? You know, one of the things I'm also working on right now is, even in the heart of Los Gatos, we want to bring an organization in so where we can hold a multi-day event that's partnered with the town and really bring in, again, an influx of development and show that venture is interested not only in global but local.
Yeah. Is the city of San Francisco cooperative in this realm? And how would you describe the different cities in terms of the strong ones and the ones that don't get it yet?
That's a good question. I wouldn't say that I'm really probably the right person to ask. I know that we're going after it, and we'll have more data on that as we kind of plug along. But San Francisco has always had its doors open. I think it's what's required is having someone come through those doors who has a vision and determination and the ability to see how these pieces can work together to help each other. And same thing with the smaller towns like San Jose is a bigger town, or Los Gatos. Mm-hmm. Same thing. Doors are usually open, but venture often doesn't look that direction. So it requires someone to come in who's like you, Mark, who can really create relationships and have unique collaborative ideas that bring in more and more people and educates them. I really think that there's a part to venture where you design your own categories, particularly now with AI. There's all these new tools. There's all these new structure going in. What we called a particular market a few years ago may become something else. Let me give you an example. You think back to Uber, right? Mm-hmm. And ride sharing. I mean, ride share was not really a market. Right. Or the gig economy. These are new emerging categories. And I think AI brings in that potential, where you could now redesign the category as opposed to try to kind of push yourself into an old one. And that's what we do with community design. It's like, how can we educate the government or our local, you know, partners on what we're doing that's a little bit different that can help us all grow in unique new ways?
Well, AI is emerging extremely fast. Emerging might not even be the right word, right? It's here, and it's growing like crazy. It's getting cheaper, and more people have access to it, and it's just growing quickly. Mm-hmm. But from you used the comparison to Uber. What can you give me an example of what an AI company might do to create its own category?
Yeah, good one. I mean, so many people are worried about. Let's flesh this out now here together as an example. I mean, so many people are concerned how AI may take jobs and things may disappear and be turned over to a bot or some other form of new technology. But I think what this really positions us for is not so much the pie shrinking and who's going to be left out, but the pie growing and new emerging sectors will come out. And it's somebody with the creative eye that says, that I can do something here. The last, okay, I don't want to get into this too much, but there are people who are scared, and that's fine. You got to go through those motions of change. Change management is difficult. But if you get stuck in a change management situation and think you're the victim to change, you never slip into what I believe we all have is this creative opportunity to build something that brings out the our better parts. So there's going to be a lot of change with AI. Things may get better. They may, you know, it depends on where you sit.
I expect them to get better. I was telling Scott, my man over here, the other day that within 5 years, he's going to have 100 AI agents working for him or robots. You know, he'll have his own staff, but they'll be digital.
Yeah. What I think is cool, too.
It'll make his life a lot better.
Yeah. And you know what I think is coming, too? I know I'm jumping around here. I just get excited talking to you, Mark. What I think is coming is that first solopreneur unicorn. Oftentimes when you look at startups and investors, well, first thing they look at is the team. And they'll look for someone who has an exit, someone who has certain experience. Is it, you know, just, you know, is it more than just an engineer? Do you have a sales individual? Do you have a marketing person? Do you have, you know, operations? Do you have legal, you know, is it balanced? But I think with AI, the day is going to come where we have that solopreneur who's the first unicorn.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought of that you can do it with you and some machines and grow a very, very nice business. And I think that that's going to be good for America because when you think about this, I agree with you that this is not, of course, we need containment over you know how this stuff gets deployed at some level, but realistically, it's going to make everybody's life a lot better because we're going to be a lot more productive and we're going to be able to do things that we want to do that we're naturally good at versus repetitive tasks that may not really be as exciting to us. Let's do things that are exciting to us so that we unleash our creativity. And so I'm super excited about what it brings, even though I'm at the older age of maybe I may not see as much as what the younger people are today, but it's exciting to be living through something this enormous.
Yeah, and the young, when I say the young, those who are in high school, even my daughter who's 9 in elementary school, she's starting to, you know, ask questions about startups. She's been on my show.
Wow, that's awesome.
But what's really cool is I would like to see more and more young people get jobs and then their boss really educate them or give them opportunities for entrepreneurship. And you see some of these larger companies that give their, you know, project managers that wiggle room. Like, hey, we don't have a solve here. Can you do it? And if you have an idea, can you introduce it? So when you really, you know, look at the direction we're going, I think it's time to start pushing a little bit more on our youth about entrepreneurship so that we prepare them for the entrepreneurship, because we may all have to have our own businesses at one point and we may have to diversify in terms of like, okay, I work for this person for 4 hours, but then I run my own business here for another 4 hours. That may be the world that's, you know, on the horizon. Yeah.
My kids and I have adult children, and we were talking about this the other day is to, they've got kids ranging from 1-year-old to 14. They've got 7 grandkids. And, you know, what should we teach them? What should we talk about at the family dinner table? And this, the thought generally among the three of us were that we need to teach them some of those things that are not going to go away. Treating people with respect is not going to go away. Showing gratitude and things like that, and people skills, they're not going to go away. The ability to be able to think and figure things out, we're always going to need those kind of things no matter what job we go after or what company we want to build. We need some of these basic things, and our kids should probably expect to pivot and have multiple careers, whether they be simultaneously by, like you're suggesting, or, you know, you go down one path and then things change so fast, you had to pivot and, you know, think on your feet and become something else.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I remember as you're saying that, looking back on my youth that my parents did well, particularly my mom, is dinner was very routine, meaning we're going to eat together. When dad gets home, that's when we're going to eat. And so she would, you know, take the time to cook. And then we'd all be at the dinner table. Now, mind you, you think, oh, kids nowadays, you know, have screens and they're flipping through their phone while at the dinner table. Well, when I was a kid, my mom and whole family were watching football. So I grew up in that.
Yeah.
So it's not to eliminate those things, but to your point about, you know, what do we have conversations with about our kids? I think just getting the family together or having those rituals where you can enjoy something together, recap your day, be interested in each other, I think is really the starting point. And if we can just nurture that as they grow, give that, I guess, friends and family infrastructure, we're on a good path.
Yeah, I agree. When I was a kid, we would sit around the table. My parents owned a TV shop, so sounds like maybe, I don't know what your dad did for a living, but he owned his own businesses, and so my parents owned their own business. So we would often talk about things that were going on in the family business, but then we would also talk about how we did in sports. So I played football. Yeah. My brothers played football. So how did you do at practice today? Those kind of things. And the one thing that my parents taught us, which I think is important to teach our kids as well, is that we need to compete. And that, you know, the coach you may not always appreciate what the coach is saying or what the teacher is saying, but you know, don't be a victim about it, right? What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And how can you compete in order to win? And instead of my parents circling around to talk to the teacher or talk to the coach or what have you, if it didn't go my way. And so I think in many ways, they taught us not to be a victim.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a key to success for the up and coming generation too, because nobody's coming to save them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the same way, Mark. My dad was a big athlete. I mean, he rode for KTM. He was a world-class skeet shooter. He just was really a great athlete. I wasn't as good as he was, but I did grow up playing sports. I played football and baseball, and I loved the locker room, right? I love my family. I love riding motorcycles with my dad, dirt bikes, and then, of course, all the family, and then growing up playing soccer and having my friends. And that sense of healthy competition and camaraderie is kind of what I'm still preaching about today. It's like, let's get everyone together. Let's get Silicon Valley and Sacramento together, and let's you know, do something together.
Yes.
And then let's find ways to compete, to challenge each other. I think when it comes to startup, people grossly underestimate the resilience and the competition that is needed. Those are the quiet things. I mean, we hear, you know, TED Talks about resilience, but really tuning yourself into this idea of like, I'm going to run through that wall, and what's on the other side may not be anything that I need, so I'm going to run through the next wall is really unique. But at the same time, not only having that juggernaut mentality, if you're an X-Man fan, but also having the emotional intelligence to know when to pivot, because you can't run through a pivot opportunity. And that's why it comes back to this idea of leading with heart, because intellectually and from the ego, you can run through a wall. But if you don't have both engaged, then you're going to miss a pivot and you're going to just go right off a cliff.
How do you read that in startup founders and founding teams? And how do you, I mean, obviously, if you see a company that's successful, they probably have that. But when they're just starting off and you're thinking about, should we invest, how do you measure that? How do you get a good gut feeling about all that?
Yeah, the standard question really, it begins with, do you have someone on your team who has an exit, right? Really, you kind of look for that. Do they have the pedigree? But to the point of these qualities, I think there's this hunger of knowledge first. There's this curiosity balanced with a sense of conviction. For example, when you think about going to launch a startup, you're going to go look for all the best advice and what to do next, and then forget it and just go and find out, right? Mm-hmm. You got to go out and find out, actually, in this. But you still, your North Star, I believe, are your values and your market. I really believe that once your values and your market is aligned, the product or the service that you're bringing to market can kind of take shape.
Yeah. If you've got enough stick-to-itiveness, you will figure it out.
Yeah, yeah. A good example, a few years ago, I was close with Visby Medical. And Visby Medical really began as an at-home STD kit. And they were doing well. And, you know, their CEO, Mark from Stanford, great guy, worked closely with him. In fact, they were at the incubator that I was driving at the time. Got to talk to a lot of their lab technicians. And then COVID hit. And they went instantly from, you know, a slow trajectory up with what they were doing, but then pivoted at the right time and became one of the first companies that were providing at-home COVID tests. So again, you could be driving, no, we're going to provide this product. We've done all the research because that's technically, you know, going to require FDA approval. But because it's still aligned with the requirements of COVID and all that, they were able to pivot. But if he, Mark, didn't have that ability to kind of look around and go, here's an opportunity that still aligns with helping people at home, they may have missed it.
Mm, yeah. Very interesting. What about on the investor side? Let's put an investor hat on. You work with a lot of investors. You do investing. What makes a good angel investor, and what are some of the things that you've seen angel investors do that are not as wise?
Oh, my geez. Where do I start there? I think what's difficult for an angel investor is getting their own ego out of the way. Mm. That would be one. We can go down a rabbit hole there. Not having their own network. So, for example, if like I am just geeking out on AI infrastructure at this point, but I don't know enough of it to make a personal investment at this point. But I have friends that I can call on and ask about that. Like, what does this mean? Okay. Right. And so when you... angel investors will cut a check usually in the area where they have their most familiarity. That's why alignment is so important. And I want to say this, so remind me to come back to your question here. When it comes to fundraising, I think it's a two-way street. Most startups don't give themselves permission to vet investors. Like, you really want to, the top startups are going to have their choice. But most of us who are really kind of starting out, you're going to fall into that muddled middle kind of. And you really have to put on this mentality of, number one, is there alignment, right? What does the VC, or in your question, what does the angel bring to the table? Because I've seen a lot of my friends who are angel investors end up working in the startup that they're investing in. So they're not only investing cash, but sweat equity. And so if the only thing an angel is bringing to the table is cash, or a VC, if all they're bringing is cash, as a founder, I would strongly advise you, if I could say advise, to just think twice about that. Your advantage is to have access to resources. And so you want, investors look for founder fit, you also want investor fit. And a lot of times that's hard for founders to come along who are in crisis mode, and grabbing whatever they can, because their cliff is, you know, a few weeks, if not a month away.
Yeah, I've been, you know, you mentioned the ego getting in the way of the investor because he or she thinks they know more than maybe their collective network may know. I've also seen when founders, they needed the money so bad, they thought they needed the money so bad, that they sort of settled for investors that had a big ego, and they really became kind of the pain in the ass investor who was, you know, wouldn't leave them alone and was kind of negative toward them and almost stressing out the person that's trying to build a business. And the one angel investor causes you so many headaches. You're thinking about that more than growing your business.
Mark, can we bring up a topic on that? Yeah. Okay. All right. The one thing, this is on the investor side that I watch. You have these angel investors, or maybe they're in a fund now at this point, whatever, that they themselves, even though investors say, hey, I need to see someone on your cap table, or not your cap table, excuse me, your founding team that has experience. I don't think that's a deal breaker if there isn't. However, it's these investors, and these VCs that say, don't take advice from to founders, don't take advice from somebody who doesn't have an exit. I think that's such an egotistical statement, because the person who's saying it at one point didn't have experience. And then they brought in a team who probably didn't have experience. Maybe somebody did, but they worked hard and they figured it out, and then they had the exit. So to say, you know, don't take advice from somebody who hasn't done it before, is to kind of dismiss where you started, if you had, right. or, and even worse, dismiss the team.
And everybody has their first exit. I mean, yeah. Steve Jobs started in a garage, yeah. and he, I'm sure, had a certain amount of knowledge and wisdom that could be shared with other startups
yeah.
before he had an exit.
So you asked me earlier too, and I another question I probably didn't fully answer was, what do you look for, uh-huh. right? It's this balance. It's back to this idea of balance of, you need to be smart. Oh, I love what Ray Dalio says. He says, you need to be hungry, humble, and smart. So hungry, you have this conviction, like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to sell it. Like my buddy now, Alex Holt, he was actually drafted by the San Jose Sharks. So he played hockey for years, built up a restaurant empire, sold everything. And now he's pushing his startup because he believes it solves a problem in the restaurant industry. So he demonstrates founder fit and has identified a problem and says, I'm selling everything to solve this. Now that's hungry. And he's hungry.
That's commitment.
Yeah. He's sold everything. He's on the mission. And he's very humble too, because he'll ask me, he'll text me. And he's one of these guys who, like me, are up at 2 a.m. in the morning randomly. And he says, hey, what do you think about this? Right. So he's constantly looking to learn. And so I'm sure he's doing that with all his friends. So there's the hungry, and then he's smart, because he brings in people who he knows can kind of fill in his, you know, blind spots. Mm-hmm. So I think when you're looking for somebody, or the characteristics within yourself, you know, do you have that hunger and that humility and the smarts in order to kind of dance between the raindrops?
Yeah. And I'm going to circle back to the question, because you reminded me to, you reminded me to remind you about investors and, you know, how to become a great angel investor, and when people are not angel investors. And what was going through my mind as I was asking the question was, what I've seen with people who got into angel investing and then got out because maybe they were 0-for-3. Hey, they invested into three, they watched them sort of fizzle out, and then they were gone. But it's one of those occupations, if you will, or one of those hobbies piece of your portfolio construction that really one or two might not be the right answer. You might be better off throwing just a little bit of money in a broader cross section of startups, because they, you know, there's a high failure rate. So don't get all pushed out of shape because you had a couple of, you're 0-for-2 or 0-for-3 at the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, VCs often take that strategy, right? Spread it across different companies. They deploy to several companies. But in terms of an angel investor, you may just wanted to, you know, add a startup to your portfolio or a small business, you know, and even angel investors and VCs are adding small businesses to their portfolio. So it's not just startups that are venture, it's mom and pop shops. We want to add this too. I think it's, for an angel investor, what they need to look for is, one thing I look for is momentum, right? In the person, in the project, is there momentum? And is the timing right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different things. I may have not brought my gut instinct up to a conscious competence level. But I think there's a feel to the totality or the holistic view of what's going on that says this is a go. And at the same time, I can't overly rely upon that, because I just like the person and, you know, I'm in hope mode. So I think these investments take time. You need to ask yourself or your team when you're going to make an investment at different stages. You know, hey, look at something one day, look at something another day. I know when we have second conversations or start going through due diligence with startups, it's over a period of time, right? You do it over a period of time. You think it through. You don't be impulsive. And then rely on your team to kind of let you know where your blind spots are.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be different for everybody. I mean, you and I could geek out on this all day.
Okay, well, tell me about your show. What you've mentioned a couple of people that you have on the show. What's the primary purpose of the show?
This is a fun question. So the show actually began. So the show is called Silicon Valley Impact. what it is today is now we bring in investors and startups so that we can get insight from one and innovation from the other. And so we get these multiple perspectives so that the audience can take away what they need.
On the same show, you'll have an investor and a startup or an entrepreneur.
Yeah. And, and the way that it started was a friend of me and a friend were having a conversation one day. Her name was Lisa Helfrich. She's in Canada and she has a great startup ecosystem up there. And I said, hey, let's just start talking to people. And I second guessed myself for a minute, but it made sense when I did it. I said, I don't want to do an hour. I don't have the attention span for it. Right. And she said, well, let's do it for a half hour. I said, well, one topic's boring. Everyone's doing it. And then we started just bouncing it around. I said, well, you and I got a great ecosystem. Let's bring in a main guest. And then I'll use one of the startups from DealFlow and the Bay Angels that isn't getting any attention and bring them on and do a pitch. Those are popular. Mm-hmm. So we did that. We just started bringing people on. So I'd bring on, hey, let's have Mark Haney on. Now that'd be a great conversation. And we'll ask him about what makes his life tick, right? So what are you working on and how can we help?
Yes, love it.
And so we'll talk about that for about 20 minutes and then we'll let the startup pitch for 5. And then we'll all give them feedback and that'll be the show. Simple.
That's great.
So we did that for a few years. It was back then it was called Silicon Valley Influence. But I didn't like the name because influencer didn't have a good connotation to it. It was kind of, wasn't really respectable because I believe optics are important. And then we turned it into Silicon Valley Impact and did it consistently and realized about, not this past December, but a year ago, December, a radio show was following me. And without hesitation, I said, hey, what do you think of this idea? Who's your program director? Fast forward, 3 months later, I was on the radio. And we've been doing it now for close to a year, and we're still getting on great great guests who are investors. I mean, we had, like I said, S.E. Mawadi, we had Alex Dang, we had Bill Reichert, who's from Pegasus Ventures and does the Startup World Cup. That was really cool. We had Kevin Jervich, who used to play for the 49ers, but he's got a startup now. Some really fun topics and just very organic. People will come to the studio and say, hey, what are we talking about today? And I'll just do high level stuff. And we've also picked a couple of topics other than just organic talk. I brought in Marianne Becker for a while and we wanted to focus on women in leadership. So we had that topic and we do reoccurring topics there. We focus on partnerships, corporate partnerships, because I believe, again, the right partnership will scale you faster than anything. And the third one is go to market. So we'll, again, dance around. We'll have those topics, but for the most part, we just bring really good people in who are good at what they do. And a lot of them are really good educators. They teach the market. And so that's Silicon Valley Impact, and we're having a ton of fun with it. I do it with Brian Bernasconi, and I don't see it quitting anytime soon.
Okay, so I have two more questions. Number one, what do the Niners need to do to turn it around? This was a really disappointing season. I think they were in favor to win virtually every game, and they didn't. They certainly did not. Didn't even make the playoffs. What do we need to do in the next 6-7 months to get them ready to play?
Number one, I'd fire all the trainers. I'd fire all the trainers because I'm just sick of seeing all these injuries. Number one. Number two, I'm wondering what's going on. I would get in there and ask questions about leadership. I love the coaches. I wouldn't change anything. Like Shanahan's great. I question a little bit his ability to close games since he was with Atlanta. I got a question mark around that. So maybe I'd get him an assistant who could really close. So that's the first two. And then in terms of positions, the team's great. You really get the feel that the team has a great camaraderie. So I'd make sure you keep that nucleus together. That's your founding team. And I would get the Purdy situation behind you as quick as possible. And we need a couple corners and we need to get maybe our first round draft pick should be an offensive lineman.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we have to get people. We got to sign Purdy for sure, and then we need to get people to protect Purdy. But I've already seen them. They let Charvarius Ward go. Their defensive back there. It looks like they're going to let a few of those guys go into free agency. So, they've got some young defensive backs, but they also need to put on a better pass rush. I mean, they've got Bosa, but they didn't seem to put on enough of a pass rush last year. So their whole defense, hopefully with Robert Saleh coming back, they can improve that.
You nailed it. That was a great close, Mark. I don't know what it is. They can't dial up blitzes. You know, I don't know why they're playing such a vanilla defense. They got great players. They got to get more pressure, dial up some schemes that keeps, you know, the offense guessing. And I hope Saleh brings that back. He wasn't, you know, really big on that. He was good at it, but he also had a great team. I hope he has something to prove on it, you know, coming back.
I love it. Okay, so last question. What did I not ask you? I mean, you have this broad understanding of what startups are doing, what venture is doing, what's going on in the Silicon Valley, and even globally. So what did I not ask you that our audience ought to know?
How can I help Sacramento? I mean, I love it here. Like I said, I've been coming here, you know, for the last 10 years. I have family in the area. And I love engaging with this community. So however I can help this community get connected, I want to be there. I want to be on the front line. So I love the question that you asked at GFX that I've committed to memory. You know, what are you working on, Sacramento? And how can I help? Right. I think that needs to be continuously asked. And when we can start connecting as neighbors, Sacramento, Silicon Valley, Sacramento, Silicon Valley, go global. Again, we make a bigger sandbox and it only gets a lot more fun.
Well, I appreciate, you know, we're emerging and you've built something really special. So the fact that you want to help, that's it's gratifying. I love the approach of lead with the heart. I think Silicon Valley, the Bay Area, and the Sacramento area, we can become partners. And you know, the amount of resources that you have, if you bring some of that, we'll bring all our resources to help you as well.
Yeah. So, and you know, in close, you know, if you want to connect with me, you can find me real simple, Brian@BrianSparks.com. Or go to Brian@SiliconValleyVenture.com and happy to help in any way I can.
I love it. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate you coming on the show.
All right. Thanks for having me, Mark.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.